The final session. Brad Meritz. Brad Meritz is a research specialist with the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. He works on several research projects related to influenza and other respiratory infections in schools, primary care clinics, and long-term care facilities.
Thank you. Thanks for sticking it out again. I know it's getting late in the afternoon. I'm seeing some tired faces out here. I guess I'll just start out by thanking everyone in the agencies you see here who helped out with these projects, as well as the co-authors, especially Dr. Tempty, who's been a fantastic mentor for me, and then also Emily Tempty, who's sitting up here, as well as Amber Schemmel. So we'll start out with some background. So currently in the U.S., we have a significantly aging population. You can see on the left as a demographic figure from 1965, and on the right from 2015. And as a result of this, we're having a lot more people spend time in long-term care facilities. In fact, about 68% of us, if we live to be greater than 65, we'll spend some time in a long-term care facility during our life. So, as we all know, influenza is a highly transmissible disease. And in these long-term care facilities, you have very close quartering. There's lots of interactions between residents, as well as residents and staff, and also visitors that are stopping in. And this is a very high-risk population, tend to be older people with multiple medical comorbidities, and there is reduced efficacy of influenza vaccine in this population. This all leads to very high attack rates, ranging from 7 to 27% in these long-term care facilities, and is associated with mortality of 4 to 5%. So this data is a little bit dated, but in 2001 there was an assessment that followed 551 LTCF residents over the course of a year. They identified 128 influenza-like illness episodes, 28 emergency department visits, 36 hospitalizations, and cost analysis was done and was found to be about $330 per resident per year. And across the country, the rate of hospitalization attributed to influenza was about 322 out of 100,000 individuals greater than 65 years of age. And overall, one cost estimate found that influenza cost about $8.3 billion for elder Americans per year. So current approaches to influenza in long-term care, the CDC recommends testing when any resident has signs and symptoms of an influenza-like illness, and they recommend testing by PCR, immunofluorescence, or rapid testing. And the ILI definition is a fever with a temperature of greater than 100 and a cough or sore throat. And through some surveillance that we've done, we found that in this particular population, the ILI definition is not always very sensitive for laboratory confirmed flu. So, and when an outbreak is detected early, can lead to rapid termination if the proper public health measures are taken. So, like I just mentioned, so through the ISP, or now ARES study, as many of you probably are familiar with, we found that about 31% of people greater than 65 meet the ILI case criteria. And this leads to multiple missed opportunities for case identification. And so current methods are oftentimes reactive and not proactive, and delays in detection allow continuing spread within these facilities. So this slide on the left, you can see is a course of care that could typically take place at these facilities. And you can see just right off the bat that it's long and can be a little complicated, and communication isn't always the greatest. Oftentimes, these individuals aren't tested until they make it to an emergency department or they're admitted to a hospital. And oftentimes, the reporting back to these facilities is not done at all, or if it is done, it's not done in a timely manner. However, if you provide facilities with rapid influenza detection testing, in theory, they could immediately test for influenza and have an answer very quickly and take the appropriate measures. So we established an acute respiratory illness surveillance network across 7 long-term care facilities in southern Wisconsin. Of note, one site was not very representative of an average long-term care facility. And what I mean by this is it was particularly large, and also it was a state facility that was for people who had severe developmental disabilities. As a result, many of the patients there are significantly younger than most long-term care. And in this study, there was actually an age range of down to 10 years old, unfortunately. So we trained the staff at these facilities to collect nasal specimens using foam swabs from residents with acute onset, which we defined as less than 4 days, of at least 2 of the following symptoms, so fever, cough, sore throat, nasal congestion, runny nose. And again, just to clarify, they needed just 2 of these, any 2. They did not need to have a fever. And so we collected specimens from December 2015 through April 2017, and we tested, they were tested for influenza and RSV using the Quidel Sophia Fluorescent Immunoassay Analyzer. And the residual, the swabs and the residual lysis buffer was then sent on to the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene, where they tested for influenza with by PCR and also a multiplex PCR. Then we wanted to assess the efficacy and the performance of the Sophia influenza test in this population. And so we also wanted to just assess the roles of other respiratory viruses in long-term care facilities. And again, so we used the Luminex NX Tag respiratory pathogen panel at the state lab and tested for a variety of viruses. So we had 116 specimens that were tested by PCR. Of those, 65% were positive for any virus, and we identified 13 different respiratory viruses. Here's a figure of the viruses that we identified. As you can see in the top, rhinoviruses and enteroviruses was far and away the most common at about 35%. After that, we had RSV, flu B, and flu A, and those together made up about 44% of the cases that are of the positive results. And then after that, we had a variety of things that we identified, different strains of coronavirus, parainfluenza virus, and human metapneumovirus, among other things. And so we had 116 paired samples that we used to assess the Sophia performance for influenza. And as you can see, the age, again, was a bit younger than most long-term care facilities. However, we found a moderately high sensitivity for influenza of 76.5% and specificity of 95.9%. And for RSV, we had a few less samples. Not all of the sites used the RSV rapid testing for everybody, but we calculated a sensitivity for Sofia, for RSV, not influenza, of 61.5% and a specificity of 97%. And so from this we found that many different respiratory viruses circulate within long-term care populations, and RSV and influenza account for a significant portion of these. And it seems that quite the Sofia rapid tests may be an effective tool for early detection in these long-term care facilities. And although the sensitivity is moderately high at 76%, the likelihood of picking up one of the first three cases of flu is estimated at about 98.6% and then 94.5% for RSV. And so this indicates that aggressive use of rapid technology may allow for early outbreak detection and response. And so this was an observational study. It was a small sample size, which led to the wide confidence limits. It just took place in southern Wisconsin over the course of about a year and a half. And again, many specimens were from the facility that is not representative of most long-term care facilities. However, there were multiple sites, and it was a real-life observational trial. And what I mean by that is the staff at these facilities were trained, and it didn't in a very quick, easy manner. The tests are very easy to run. And they're cheap, and so this, in theory, could be a very easy to replicate and get started at new facilities. We had public health lab backup with state-of-the-art testing, and although the time span was limited, it did take place over the course of at least part of two different respiratory virus seasons. So, to conclude, the application of cutting-edge, inexpensive, high-performing, and reliable technology into a population of that's traditionally underserved and high-risk could provide a translatable model for early and proactive detection of influenza. And early use of this would lead to early use of the appropriate medical and public health interventions. So all of this work was the beginning, kind of proof of concept of a different trial that we have now initiated. We have started a randomized clinical control trial throughout 20 sites in Wisconsin, throughout the state, and it's going to take place over 3 years. And we want to, essentially what we are doing is supplying these sites with the rapid tests and seeing what they do with the tests. So, and we want to know if this can be associated with earlier detection and as a result the reduction of hospitalization and death related to influenza. And so we don't have any results available for this trial yet, unfortunately, but just some qualitative feedback that we've been getting from these facilities. One site said that they believe the Sofia machine was very helpful with this outbreak and hopefully stopping any spread, and another told us that they are treating all residents with prophylaxis Tamiflu, and those that have tested positive are being treated, and that was during an outbreak. And that is it. Any questions?
So So thank you. That was extremely interesting. My question is, as you had said, that that one developmental facility is kind of skewing your results. I'm wondering if you've considered doing some kind of sub-analysis, if there's enough data to remove them from that and see how it affects your sensitivity and specificity.
Yeah, absolutely. So we haven't done that. I think that is a great idea. I don't know off the top of my head the exact percentage of the specimens that we had that came from there. I would guess it's maybe close to almost 50%. So I think that would be very interesting, though, if we did that.
I had a question about the positive influenzas that came out of those seven sites. I saw that the influenza B actually had more positive detections than influenza A, and I was curious about that since, you know, typically, you know, A is more prevalent than B in a season and particularly in long-term care, mm-hmm. although we do have that one facility with a younger population. And it could be, you know, relatively small sample size, but I was wondering if you had any false positive detections of B with the Sophia, as I know that mm-hmm. has been a problem in the past.
Yeah. So I think there were several, a few false positive tests for the B, but the reason that we found more B actually was there was an outbreak of flu B in the large facility. And that's what kind of drove that number. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I was just curious, and you may have done this and just not gone into that much detail because your presentation time was limited. So we've mm-hmm. been tracking this in Louisiana in our Sentinel surveillance virologic sites for about four seasons. And as you know, the circulating viruses have been very different in the mm-hmm. four seasons. So I haven't combined the numbers for sensitivity and specificity just because the viruses have been so different each season. Mm-hmm. We also separate things out for A and B, and we find a lot of differences. So we have four main manufacturers that are used in Louisiana, mm-hmm. And we have seen a lot of differences even among the seasons with which manufacturers perform different. So have you thought about separating those numbers out and looking at them A and B and splitting the seasons?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. For this trial, again, it was very small, and we just wanted to kind of get an idea of just if it worked in general.
Yeah.
So I think for the large clinical trial that we've started, I think that's a great idea.
Because even like the manufacturer inserts for A and B,
yeah.
you know, what they say the sensitivity and specificity should be, we've never gotten to that level mm-hmm. for any of the tests.
Yeah.
Way below it. I'm sure you all can
yeah.
experience that. So the number you presented was, I was really impressed that it was at 76%, but it would be interesting to me to know if either A or B was driving that one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've seen that it tends to, one tends to vary and they perform better for one.
Yeah.
Another.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just
awesome.
Curious.
Thanks.
Anything else? All right. Well, thank you, everybody. And I will also make a shameless plug for the Influenza and Viral Respiratory Diseases Subcommittee. If there's anybody in the room who's interested in working with us, we have multiple working groups and monthly calls with webinars and all sorts of great information. You can, I'm happy to give you my card. I think Ms. Monica's still in the room, or Monica Schrader from CSDE. So if you're interested, please let us know. We're happy to have you on board. And thanks, everybody, for the great conference and safe travels.